seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course, well, that's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course, we want to play at the weekend.
Hello, welcome along to Golf Weekly. No Joe this week, but Fiona's here.
Hey, Nathan.
And Dave McIntyre is here.
Hiya, boys.
You must be on the verge of a permanent residency at this stage.
I'm not sure what it takes to become a permanent resident, but I always know
one
there's...
One of us to die, and given I'm the oldest, let's go with me.
You're probably the healthiest.
Well, there
no.
is that.
I say Joe Malloy is the healthiest.
I would
Joe hasn't eaten. Joe hasn't had sugar in about 6 months.
Yeah, he's no carbs before anything. Yeah.
Well, you're a non-drinker,
that's
which
true.
Goes an awful long way to making you the healthiest.
Meanwhile, like thousands of Golf Pod listeners go, ugh.
What an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't trust him. How can you trust someone who doesn't drink?
We could just make it a foursome rather than a threesome, and then nobody would have to die, which would probably be the ideal outcome for everybody. So it's the week of the Players' Championship. Rory, Dustin, Spieth, Jason Day, 48 of the world's top 50, making it one of the strongest fields of the year on the PGA Tour. We're going to talk lots about that. It has already been a very good week for Rory McIlroy. A new $100 million deal to join TaylorMade. They're going to supply all his equipment, every club in the bag, even his golf ball, which he says is the actual main reason he decided to go with TaylorMade.
What? Really? I know we're going to talk about it, but
we're going to hear from Rory explaining it exactly. He did say after the Masters that the main issue he found was the golf ball he was playing with then, and that he needed to find a solution. Now, and we will play this and get into it more. I do question the wisdom of deciding on every club in the bag based upon the golf ball, though maybe, and we'll hear from him later, it was quite a difficult press conference for Rory, because obviously you're still signed with Nike. You're still wearing Nike. You can't really go, well, I'm delighted to be with TaylorMade at last because that crap I've been using for the last 4 years.
And the 40,000 Nike golf balls that are sitting in my garage, there's going to be a garage sale.
Like, this couldn't have worked out better for him. So Nike ring up and go, listen, really sorry, we're pulling out of this market. And you're probably thinking, oh, this is going to cost me money. What's the contract like? Can we sue them? And then they go, no, we're going to keep you on the same contract. Just wear our clothes. We'll give you the 100. In fact, let's extend that deal. 100 million for the next 10 years. Cool. And then he signs another 100 million quid deal with TaylorMade.
He's rich.
He's up in about 60 million a year.
Couldn't have worked out better for him.
He has. So that's 89 million more than the 11 million you need, Nathan, to be happy.
You see, I listened to last week's podcast and I don't understand where the abuse was coming from. I was being real. The abuse should be aimed squarely at Joe Malloy.
Well, was it not? No.
It was a bit. Well, no.
Because I'm the only one who's being somewhat... Well, you were being realistic.
I
could win 11 million on the lotto.
Yeah.
How's Joe Malloy ever going to get 500 million quid?
He's not. But he's...
So therefore, he's living in some sort of dreamland. I can make plans for my 11.5 million.
He could win the Euro Millions 4 times.
He's as likely to have some rich billionaire in America who's become a fan of the Golf Podcast, go, you know what? I'm going to give that guy
his 500 million.
Yeah. As you are of winning the lottery. I mean, not you because you're Nathan Murphy, as any of us are of winning the lottery.
Has that ever happened where a billionaire American has just listened to a podcast and said, I'm just going to give him half of everything I have?
All right. Anyway.
Anyway, it was a ridiculous conversation when we had it 2 weeks ago, and it's still a ridiculous conversation right now. Of course, Golf Weekly is brought to you with thanks to our very good friends at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open in association with the Rory Foundation. It all takes place at Port Stewart in Northern Ireland from the 6th to the 9th of July. Tickets are on sale now. And I was at a lunch yesterday, Fionn, hosted by the Northern Ireland Tourist Board. I thought you'd be there. It's the type of thing you'd be at.
Yeah, the NITB. They do good work. It's Trojan work.
They do good lunch. I had the greatest lunch I have ever had. It was in the Stone Leaf restaurant on Leeson Street. I'd never heard of it. I had a braised beef cheek, you know, cooked for about 12 hours. Sensational.
Really?
I haven't spoken about a meal as much for quite a long time.
No, and you've brought it up in my presence at least 4 times now.
It was unbelievably good.
Did they have like little presentation videos about the charms of Northern Ireland?
They did. A lot of great golf courses, as we know, in Northern Ireland. Game of Thrones stuff. I was saying to them it's worked out quite well because the Irish Open's on in July and Game of Thrones is back at the end of June. So, and they film some of Game of Thrones on the beach at Port Stewart.
That's right. Did they talk about
that? It was
Titanic?
Worth their while giving me a bit of beef, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I'm
really
giving
was.
Them more promo than they could ever
Seriously.
Ask for.
Did they talk about Titanic? Did they talk?
No,
about...
no. It was all golf. It was their of their Irish Open Northern Ireland Tourist Board thing. But what they were saying, Simon Alice, who is the tournament director, who I've seen around the place, he's very involved in the European Tour. I never realised this.
Peter Alice's son.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. So he's the tournament director, but he was saying they expect it to sell out.
Well, what?
So they have 100,000 tickets.
Would you not be shocked if they didn't?
Well, there's not many golf tournaments to sell out. I know they're slightly restricted on a links course. It's sold out at Port Rush. Yeah. But 100,000 is a massive crowd for a golf tournament when it's a long distance from Dublin. It's about 3 hours from Dublin.
Yeah. I just assumed that because Rory's involved, Rory'd have, you know, if there's five of the top 50 in the world playing.
Oh, it'd be more than that.
Yeah.
So obviously Justin Rose is there. They're going to announce a few more over the next couple of weeks.
I didn't think the Port Show could cater to 25,000 per day. That's if it is 25,000 per day, or they expect more.
No, I think it'll be 20,000 per day and then 20,000 over the other 3 days, the practice days leading up to it. So 20,000 a day. So,
it's a great course.
So get your tickets. If you want to go, get your tickets. Check out Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. And we're going to be up there and we're going to be talking
favorite
lots
of the
more.
Opens.
The only Open. The Open doesn't even exist really anymore. And they were saying that next year they don't know where the Irish Open is going to be held just yet, but there was talk of Ballyliffin. And that now again with the Irish Open it's slightly different down here because whoever bids for it and whoever wants it basically gets it, but that the Scottish Open may move to Loch Lomond, which is obviously not a links course,
no,
which could present an opportunity for the Irish Open to just swoop in there and move into the week before
which
the Open,
what it
if it's
used
played
to
on
be
a links
like.
Course.
Do you remember when the Scottish Open was played at Loch Lomond?
Yeah,
that's a beautiful course, but yeah, so. And we were always kind of vying for that, the pre-open links course open, if you know what I mean. Sorry.
Yeah. So maybe this is an opportunity. Anyway, there's a lot of what-ifs and maybes and speculation involved in that. So plenty to talk about over the next while. First, your tweets. Apologies if we don't get to read out your tweet. There was a time when we read out every single tweet. But now I wake up every morning, I have a quick look to see, has anybody tweeted Golf Weekly? There's about 20 of them every morning. Pictures from all over the world. It's not the way to start your day. It doesn't make you feel good about your life. No. I'm here at Sawgrass. I'm here in New York. I'm here in bed and Red Farn. I'm getting out. Yeah, it's not as exciting. Roland Lewis sent a picture of an unnamed listener alongside Fionn Davenport and Joe Molloy at Luttrellstown Castle Golf Club, where they seem to be enjoying a very good round.
Robert Emmett is the listener.
Not the Robert Emmett.
I think it could be the Robert Emmett.
Wow.
Mm. When did
this happen?
Yesterday.
Okay. So you and Joe just went out.
Well, Joe and I put ourselves down for the Wednesday comp and we went out very, very early and Robert was there. And so the three of us played a lovely round. I have to say, Robert, if there was money there, Robert took the money. But I must say, there's an interesting kind of corollary that happened. So I the first nine, I was playing awful and... So we were standing on the 11th tee and I'd hit a couple of decent drives, but not really. And so Robert, he goes, listen, I'm no pro, but there is something I've noticed between the difference between your good and bad shots, but I'm not going to say anything if you don't want me to. So he teed off. And so I went, here, you've got to say it now. So he did. So the little observation he made was actually totally correct. So as soon as I became, basically it was like clearing your hips. And I started playing quite well. I played much better in the back nine. But what struck me is the good etiquette of it. Like, I know golfers will go, oh, I don't want anyone saying anything to me. But come here, we're not playing the final round of the US Open. It's a Wednesday comp. It's friendly and all the rest. But I really, I must say, I loved, because I've played enough golf with people who venture an opinion when none is sought. Mm. And the fact that Robert was really, it was really decent, I thought. And so I know, I'm sure he's listening. So I'm grateful to him. And I think it's a good example of on-course etiquette.
Well, it's the way to approach that sometimes awkward and often clumsy type of a conversation.
Because you can see...
What was his handicap?
13.
Okay, so...
I don't know, he can play. But it's not like anyone who's been around golf long enough, it was such a clear thing that he could see. And that I clearly wasn't aware of. But once he said it, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense to me. And I just cleared the hips and all of a sudden started ripping it. So it's not like he's sitting there going, here, this is what you need to be doing. You need to be there. And you're like, come here, what are you, Bob Rotella? Get away from me. So I have to say, and it kind of provoked a thought afterwards. And I was talking to another friend of mine who's a golfer about like the idea about people who don't necessarily know each other giving each other advice on the course. Like it should be allowed, or it should be, there should be room for interchange of things. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want an uninvited opinion either.
But is the problem, yeah, the problem quite often isn't the giver, it's the receiver.
Sure.
They don't want this advice. Like, I'm happy to get any advice pretty much from anybody, no matter what their handicap. Like, somebody was playing a few weeks ago and they're like, I hit some shot wild right, never to be seen again. They're like, that was a great shot. You hit that dead straight, exactly where you were aiming for it.
Okay, so there
you go. I've watched you for four holes. You aim 5 miles out to the right every single time. Yeah. Like,
but I think one of the problems is that when you're kind of in the horrors on the golf course and your head is scrambled with like seven different swing thoughts and you're trying to fix one and something, is that another thing can scramble your brains even more. So it's not like you're so precious about your golf swing that you won't. It's that sometimes that uninvited advice can actually make things a lot worse because you're even more confused as to what you should be doing. And as we all know, anyone who's swung a golf club knows that there are those days when nothing feels right.
That tweet was from Ronan Lewis, who said, as if working on the best day of the year wasn't bad enough, my best mate sends me this picture, gutted. Of course, if you want to play with Fionn Davenport and Joe Molloy, Luttrell Sandcastle, every Wednesday, you might just get lucky. The lottery may turn in your favour.
it's like the lottery for the media at Augusta National.
Yeah.
Who's going to get to play with the lads on a Wednesday morning? What time did you tee off yesterday?
8 a.m.
Well, yeah.
Felt like we were at anything at 8 a.m. yesterday morning. It's fine.
I might join you now on those Wednesday mornings if we're able to get out that early.
It's glorious. Like it's.
I'll join you for the back nine.
The weather yesterday, the course. Oh, it's,
I've yet to make anything of my membership as yet.
We were finished there by 11:15.
Here. That's perfect.
Savage. So
you're finished there 11:15.
We'd still be in here by midday.
And Joe and I looked at each other and went, we'd go out again, wouldn't you? Would you go out again? And you're like, yeah.
The greens were good?
The greens are very fast. I mean, I've only played there a handful of times since joining. And I, as of yet, cannot get the pace of the greens. They're super quick and I just can't get that. Anyway, whatever. Very boring.
Jason Donahue. Hey, lads. Listening in, waiting for the train from Orlando to Jacksonville and then on to the Players' Championship.
Nice.
Jesus, I can't wait. Andrew Beattie. The pod is always a great break from the day job. Good work, lads. Added a picture of the White House. Thought, we have listeners from within. But Andrew Beattie is the White House correspondent for AFP.
Agence France-Presse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listeners in very high places.
Do you know what? Never mind golf. Andrew, any chance you take a call and give us the lowdown on what goes on inside the White House press room?
Yeah.
That's
a connection we have right there.
100%.
Next time we're in Washington, there's our in.
Well, Andrew, as it happens, I will be in Washington from the 1st of June until the 8th.
Yeah. And you're always free for a game of golf and a snoop around the White House.
Can I just say 100%? I am free for both those things.
Pro V1 Kenobi. At Golf Weekly, thoughts on at Rory McIlroy's new clubs. Stunned he's going with a 14-club contract. Remember the Nike putter, hashtag does not need money. I would say hashtag no such thing as too much money.
Well, there is. 12 million.
12 million. That'd be too much. That'd be too much. I'm living in the real world here. I'm not living in Rory McIlroy's world. We will get to Rory in a second. Kevin Ward, two friends out of the pod out playing at McCredden Golf on Sunday, course in Great Nick, stunning in parts. Conor Mangan, Fionn Davenport, I tweeted you and Golf Weekly, never been as excited about equipment. He's quoting Rory McIlroy. He'll either win or he'll miss the cut at the Players' Championship.
There's a touch of the, the Robbie Keane, oh, it's been my lifelong dream to play for this club.
Well, it's a touch of Golf Weekly. Like, come August, we'll be, oh, I'll tell you what, the BMW British Masters. Now, there's a golf tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Tournament I can really get behind. Yeah. The Irish Open. What? Yeah. There's a tournament in decline. Wow.
Principles just getting in the way of life. There's no need for them.
Well, of the good parts of life.
It's certainly not gotten in your way.
Well, that's because I didn't have any.
Look, actually, I just realised I'm standing with the two sterling football commentators for News Talk.
Two of two.
That's it. No, yeah. But like, you know, the real talents here.
Well, again, the two of two. There's nobody really to compare us to.
It's a short list.
Well, here's the thing. John Motson and Barry Davies.
What about
Davies?
Them?
Are you? Oh, I see the way he picked the Davies straight away, leaving you with the Motson.
Well, not necessarily leaving me with the Motson. Him jumping in like that says more about him than it does me.
Interesting.
Dave Tyrrell, lads, great pod last week at Brandall Chamblee, surely a new friend of the pod. Time to hit the range and lift that left heel. I'd imagine there was a lot of golf instructors and a lot of people working on ranges going, what is going on? Yeah. With the amount of people who went out in the range and were trying to lift that left heel. I was just practicing at home and I was I was wildly off balance. I just wasn't getting.
Were you swaying a bit?
To excuse the pun, getting into the swing of it. Yes, right. I was swaying.
Yeah, that's the thing, is to avoid this. It's like, imagine that you're in the barrel the whole time. Mm.
I was on the range this morning trying to lock my left knee, just because there was just.
But why would you want to lock on the way through?
On the way down, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah.
Because it was.
Although,
if you
notice, Shane Lowry kind of straightens that left knee slightly as the club's coming down. So locking it isn't necessary.
Well, by locking, I mean straightening it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Rory put up, did you see the video he put up from the Players' Championship? It was just the morning he was being announced, the deal with TaylorMade. It was just a short video of his swing. There is so little movement on his back.
Yeah.
Again, you look at that and go, it's got to be... Going to hurt eventually.
Okay, I'm going to show you. Sorry, I know this is a visual image, but I'm going to show this to you, Nathan, okay? So this is two swings side by side, both Rory McIlroy. Rory as a 20-year-old and Rory this season. Take a look at that. All right? So basically, the old swing he has, the young kid's swing is Colin Montgomery's swing, and just to prove it there, look.
Yeah.
So the club, as it's coming down, it just kind of falls down his back.
Belly out.
Yeah, but the idea is that instead of, whereas the swing he has now, which is what, well, kind of Chambi's touching on, it's that real torque swing where it finishes flat, square across his back, so his back is really turned in. It's an interesting, I didn't realise how dramatically Rory has changed his swing over the last 9 years.
There you go.
It looks incredible.
Yeah, it does, of course.
I don't know of a more gorgeous swing than his.
Fred Couples.
Rory's is even more technically perfect. Looks technically perfect.
Did you sense with Chambly last week that Chambly was holding back at all on Rory?
Yeah.
That maybe he was stung by the reaction from probably Rory and within his camp to the criticism he's had previously of Rory?
Yeah. 100%. Chambly strikes me as someone who is not afraid to express a strong opinion. And as he said himself, look, I research everything I'm saying. I'm not just saying things just to cause for effect. But at the same time, he's a professional broadcaster working for NBC. He's not an idiot. Like, you know, you don't want to be making enemies of, you know, the world's, well, one of the three world's most gifted golfers. Like, you know, no point in that.
Yeah. He was brilliant, and lots of tweets saying, a great interview with Achill Molloy and Fionn Davenport. I trust he'll now become a friend of the pod. We hope so. And Joe mentioned we might give him a shout later in the year. Listen to Chambly. Brandle lifted the left heel and hit my longest drive ever, 354 yards from Owen Gallagher.
Hi, Owen.
Owen, we need video
context.
Proof of this.
And video proof. Did you hit it off a cliff?
Like down a hill.
Down a hill.
With the wind behind him.
Yeah.
Damien McCauley, another good week for
G-Mac
at Wells Fargo. Signs of a return to form. And first time watching Ram, some player, as you mentioned before. Yeah, John Ram was great again. Pretty unlucky in the end last week. James Behan played Kilcock Golf Club yesterday. Superb greens as always, but slightly disappointed there was no statue in honour of Joe Molloy's magnificent feat of breaking 80. He's not here, so we're not going to talk about that.
No.
Cameron O'Dea must say enjoyed the golf sixes today. Cannot wait for the next pod to hear the lad's opinion, especially at Fionn Davenport. It is coming your way. Fionn Davenport has his opinions formed, and I think it's going to be good. He's got a smile on his face.
Yeah.
Tom O'Neill, Golf Weekly is the best podcast going. Now I'm just into pack any territory. Interview with Chambly Brandle this week was brilliant. Hashtag golf nerds. Andy Creevy, enjoyed listening to @Brandle Chambly. Great insights and knowledge. Now to try and put it into practice. Heal up is the message. And finally, any chance you give a shout out to the Woods brothers in next week's pods? We met you at Starbucks today. Hashtag friends of the pod.
Is that you?
Yes, 6 o'clock last Sunday morning on my way to Liverpool, standing at Starbucks. I'm always happy to meet friends of the pods. There is something, though, still unnerving at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you hear somebody shouting your name, and you're like, what? Yeah. Who are you? I'm not fully awake. Yeah, so nice to meet the lads, and they were big fans of the pod, which is always good. All right, we're going to talk about the Players' Championship. Okay, so it is the week of the Players' Championship, the 44th Players' Championship, played at TPC Sawgrass in Florida, home of the iconic 17th hole with the Island Green and all that jazz, and also home to one of the best fields of the year, 48 of the world's top 50. Anyone know who the two that aren't there are? I'll put you out of your misery.
Yeah, please.
Brant Snedeker, injured, and Thomas Peters, who just hasn't turned up.
What?
Just pulled out and said, yeah, I'm not going.
So, wow.
Simple as that. So 48 of the top 50, and only Tiger Woods' back injury keeps the tournament from getting every winner of the last 28 players and major championships. This is big.
Yeah, it is big.
Is it big enough to be classified as the fifth major?
Well, they're going to call it that anyway.
Who
obviously
cares?
Not the unofficial fifth major. I'm sick of that.
Do you know what? I was thinking about this, and they were asking McIlroy about the possible change in schedule, how they may put the players to March. They'd have Players March, Masters April, PGA would move to May, and then you have US Open, and then into the FedEx Cup Series. You have something big every single month. The one thing that turning the players into a fifth major would sort of silence any questions about the PGA and where that ranks in terms of the majors.
Yeah,
suddenly the PGA, which generally has the strongest field of all the majors, that would gain in status. If they're going to do it, you would assume they're going to do it when they move the date. But can you have, could you make it a major and say that's the first major of the year before the Masters?
No. I mean, well, of course, yes, but it's one of those, what do you, like, does it horrifies you? I'm looking at Dave's face.
Has the blood drained from my face?
Yes.
What's the issue?
There are four majors. That is just the
why
end
not
of
have
it.
Five?
Why not have five?
Because there's no need for a fifth
LPGA
major.
Tour decided to have another major.
Why not?
The LPGA Tour does not have the longevity and the tradition of the men's tour.
Yeah, but in the men's tour, two of the majors used to be amateur tournaments.
The 48 of the top 50, iconic course. I don't see what could be wrong with it.
Okay, picture the Monday after the inaugural Players' Major Championship, if that's what they're going to call it. Or just the Players' Championship, and it's a major. And you've got some punter walking around, someone like Ricky Fowler. He's walking around calling himself a major champion. No, I'm sorry. And he's going on whatever the chat show is on that Monday night. So, Ricky, it took you like so long for you to become a major champion. Yeah, well, I finally got the job done. No, you didn't. You haven't won the Masters, the Open, the US Open, or the PGA Championship.
He's won the Players' Championship.
He's won the Players. Toughest field.
He's won the Players, which is just a very good tournament.
One of the toughest fields in golf. Last year, on the third day, the greens were running at 15 on the stimp meter.
I'm not doubting the quality of the field or the quality of the golf course or the toughness of the golf course, but calling it a fifth major, I think would actually devalue the rest of the majors.
Well, isn't that the reason why they don't officially declare it the fifth major? They kind of call it the unofficial one, is that they are
who's
concerned
they?
About
like
devaluing.
The media, the PGA don't call it that.
Yeah, but they don't call it that.
The PGA Tour certainly don't call it that.
No, but they're happy enough for it to be called that. I'm just saying is that it's...
Because it's the PGA's... It's their championship. It's the only one they have.
No, they have the... The PGA Championship.
Yeah, like it's the only one... No, the PGA Championship is the...
Only one they have that is a major.
Yeah, that is a major. But it's these are the only two tournaments of the year that the PGA get to stand over because they've lost everything to the PGA Tour and the USGA. So they stand over this and of course they're perfectly happy for it to be bigged up as the unofficial fifth major.
And yet, the irony, as Nathan pointed out, the PGA has the deepest field of all four majors, typically. And yet, if you were to rank the four majors in order of... emblematic importance.
Prestige.
The PGA is last.
It is last, but there has to be a last.
But is that because, I think that, whatever about whether they move the players, but if they move the PGA, I think that will gain in prestige. 100%. Because the reason it lacks prestige is because it's after three unbelievable tournaments that they're sort of a, like, what was it, they used to call it glory's last shot.
Yeah.
If you put it right in the middle of the season, maybe it gains in that because like the Open is going to be huge no matter when.
I'd have
up.
A different theory on that. If you call the Players' Championship the fifth major, you said that it would enhance the value and the prestige of the PGA Championship. I actually think it would go the other way because straight away you would have people suggesting that the Players' Championship was actually the fourth most prestigious major and the PGA Championship would go from fourth to fifth.
And then eventually, are you
going to end up in a position where one of these is actually declassified as a major?
And are you so wedded to the importance of the PGA Championship that you would be really upset if they did kind of go, yeah, whatever?
Absolutely, I'd
really.
Well, that point makes that now. Your point makes no sense on this because what would be the point of promoting the players just to get
sorry,
rid of
I'm
the PGA?
Sorry, I'm just speaking hypothetically. No. I'm not saying I don't want to promote the players at the expense of the PGA. I'm more with you. I think that moving the PGA Championship will enhance its prestige. But let's say were it to happen the way you're saying, like, so what?
Well, there's a couple of things on this. Firstly, one of the major issues I would have if the players became the fifth is that it's another major in America.
That's true.
So now you have four of the five in America on top of pretty much all the World Golf Championships and everything else.
Clearly what we want is the fifth major to be in Qatar or China.
Sorry, why is there a need for a fifth major?
Or this conversation?
Well, this is why I think it might happen, because golf is clearly in serious trouble in terms of viewing figures and in terms of people playing it and interest in general. That suddenly, if you say, we have another major, they've got the highest viewing figures of the year.
Yeah.
Drives interest.
That's it.
I don't
Money, Dave.
I don't know how having a fifth major will get people watching the other four majors in any greater way, or that it'll get them to watch regular PGA Tour events in any greater
way.
Is
the World Cup lessened by virtue of having 36 teams?
I don't think so.
No.
There you go.
But it's still one tournament. You're not, if the World Cup, as has been mooted by FIFA several times, turned into a, is it biennial or biannual event?
Biennial.
A biennial event, that dramatically dilutes the prestige of the World Cup.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if you have four and suddenly five majors, I think it not only actually dilutes the prestige of the PGA Championship, it actually would dilute the prestige of all of them.
Anyway, this is an interesting, if my aunt had balls, she'd yeah. be my uncle
well,
conversation.
Well, it's not, because you've said this may happen. What's the evidence for... We didn't have this conversation ahead of last year's players. What's the evidence that suggests that this development is closer to happening than it might have been in previous years?
Well, Rory was asked about it in his press conference, but also it has been part of the conversation over the last year that they are looking at changing the schedule, and clearly the PGA Tour have just thrown it out there to see what the reaction is like. So I think it's...
What would the players think?
The players all seem pretty much in favour of it.
Of having five majors?
Yeah.
Why not? More money.
It gives the players more of a chance to call themselves a major champion.
Well, do you know Ricky Fowler's contract on that Monday when he's going on Jimmy Kimmel Live and all that? His contract will say major champion, and he'll be getting his £2 million bonus.
If Ricky Fowler wins the inaugural Players Major Championship, he's as much of a major champion as Colin Montgomery in my eyes.
Colin Montgomery is a two-time
exactly.
major champion. John Daly is now a three-time major champion.
Exactly.
Anyways... As you say, if me aunt had balls and all that, you can tweet us what you think of the possible change to schedule. So this weekend's field, looking at the betting, it is underway. We won't really go into what's happening so far, but I'll just say I think Kyle Stanley could have a really big week. Just throwing it out there.
Well, you really examined the form, didn't you?
Well, first round leader. After that, I'm not quite sure.
Well, in saying that, he could have thrown in a snowman or something and since we started recording.
I like it.
And Nathan will look even more stupid.
Yeah. Okay, so we've moved studio. And we've moved on from our conversation about the fifth major, and we're looking at this week's Players' Championship. I've just tipped Kyle Stanley, which I think we all agree was really good. The odds, Dustin Johnson, 7-1. He is the world number one, made a good return last week, but has a pretty terrible record around Sawgrass.
Yeah, but that's kind of old DJ versus new DJ. It's DJ with no short game. And you can have long game, but if you don't have a short game at TPC, you're dead. And the proof is in the pudding. The winners that win all are like unbelievable. So his two holes, the 12th and 17th, over the course of his career, that's 26 rounds. He's had three double bogeys at the 12th. On the 17th, he's had three doubles and a triple. And so... Even though like he bombs it on 12, like he generally will go for it. He said actually in the press conference yesterday that he was going to use driver. But
so the 12th has changed.
Yeah, so the 12th, actually, yeah, that's worth pointing. Yeah, do you want to talk about the revamped 12th?
Yeah, so it used to be a 358-yard, as you say, they would drive it up as close as they could and it'd have a little wedge in to the hole. Now it is very much a drivable par 4, features fairway, bunker short, pond left, a shaved area and a pop bunker right, and a green that slopes severely towards the water. It'll play anywhere between 275 and 300 yards, which means even the
drivable,
short hitters.
Yeah, it's a drivable for everybody.
Well, some guys can get there with a 3-wood, can't they?
Yeah, but the thing is the incentive... If you're not super, super accurate, you're still going to leave it short because you've got the water on the left and the sloping green is going to drag in any errant shot. So the smart money is to play conservatively, play a little rescue down maybe, and then have like a nine or a wedge in. But the thing about DJ is that DJ has transformed his short game inside 100 yards over the last 12 to 18 months. Well, certainly the last year. So he's a completely different player. I think he's hot favourite just by virtue of his performance at Wells Fargo, which, even though he didn't end up winning, really, really impressed me. Because he barely made the cut, but then threw in 267s. And it's like, all right, I'm back. And he was, no, I won't say he was unlucky not to win, but he did everything to put himself into the conversation. Just Brian Harman did one better. But like, yeah, can you see past DJ?
Yeah. I think, and we'll probably get on to him, I think Jordan Spieth has a brilliant chance. He's played here before really well. He says his putting, he feels, is almost back to its best, and as we've seen and we know from the stats, his long game has improved beyond recognition over the past year. And of all the courses, sort of like maybe here and Hilton Head, you don't really think it would suit Dustin that his length is negated somewhat.
True.
And although they've changed that hole, like a best performance of a tie for 28th in 7 attempts suggests it doesn't fit his eye.
Yeah, or as I said,
It's a new Dustin.
But here's the thing, right? So, okay, Jordan Spieth clearly is part of this conversation. Why is Jordan Spieth 12-1 and Rory McIlroy is 10-1? Can you explain that to me?
It's just popularity. That's the influence of the punters.
Yeah,
there's more money going.
That is the factual summing up of why.
Okay.
Yeah, there is more money going in Rory. So there's nobody in this part of the world backing Jordan Spieth, or not many. Whereas if Cimarod's in Vegas, for example, you might have Jordan Spieth, and some of the top Americans a little narrower. The thing for me, in terms of it being ominous as to how well Dustin Johnson's playing, to come back from that injury, and really just need 36 holes to get out of your system.
Exactly.
And then you drop in a couple of 67s. And as you say, there you go, boys. A little bit of rust on Thursday and Friday, but I'm back again. That's testament to his work ethic and the way he has nailed his practice regime in comparison to where he was just solely relying on his talent and his booming drives in years previous to this. Because now he's a fully fledged professional elite golfer, and the injury doesn't take long to get over.
He said on one of his post-round interviews, he has been asked about the absence since the Masters and what he had been doing. And he said, well, I haven't been practicing much. And they were slating him on Sky for this. Oh, just doesn't have that work ethic. If he had the work ethic. The reason he hadn't been practicing was because he was injured.
I know. Yeah.
So there's always having a dig at Dustin. There was one stat that came out after last weekend where, again, he increased his lead at the top of the world rankings. The gap between Dustin and Rory, between number one and number two in the world, is 4.7 points. It hasn't been... over 20 years, and Tiger.
Yeah.
Over 20 years since there's been such a gap between world number one and world number two.
Wasn't there... perhaps
I know what you're going to say.
Will correct. That there was
Only Tiger surpassed that.
There was a time when Tiger dominated golf. He had a lead in the world rankings where he didn't have to swing a club for 18 months and the guy in second place had to have like an unbelievable year and he still wouldn't have caught Tiger.
Well, I thought you were going to say that there was a time a few years ago, maybe 10 years now, when he was winning all those majors, that the distance between Tiger and second
was the other one.
Comfortably greater than the distance between second and 20th.
That's right.
And it was just a sign of the rest of them just playing catch up, playing second fiddle. I wouldn't say we're there yet because it's still only one major for Dustin Johnson, and he obviously can get a chance to add one at Augusta National. But Kurt, he's comfortably the best golfer in the world right now.
I was watching the NBC online feed of the players, the lead up, and Brandel Chambly, our boy, friend of the pod. He was saying that, I mean, did he mention you? No, he didn't. But he did his usual analysis of Dustin Johnson, but he just said, look, I say all of these things about he doesn't play this very well or he needs to have a better game plan for this, but he is comfortably the best player in the field. Comfortably.
Yeah, he is.
So that's Dustin Johnson. The way we might do this, we might run down through the betting because we have some of the press conference audio from some of those just behind him. So Dustin Johnson leads the betting. Rory McIlroy second in the betting, in or around 9 or 10 to 1. And he has been the big story of the week so far, signing this long-term deal with TaylorMade, $100 million. Going to use their equipment, full bag of their equipment, and play with their golf ball. He's going to play with the TaylorMade M2 driver, the TP5X ball. He will stick with the Odyssey prototype putter for now, but he is testing a TaylorMade Spider Tour putter and a TP Mullen, all of which means he can never go back to the old Scotty Cameron again, which a lot of people, including some of our tweeters, were expressing some surprise on, that he has backed himself into a corner. Here's what he had to say about why he decided, having played with quite a few Callaway clubs at the Masters and the expectation he would go with Callaway, we should have gone with Callaway, and how he's ended up signing with TaylorMade.
Decided that I've teamed up with TaylorMade. As I said, I needed to address a few issues after Augusta. You know, I alluded to the fact that I wasn't really happy with the golf ball I was playing and I needed to do something. I felt like I struggled in the wind. So I went back to the drawing board and tested for about 10 days, pretty extensively after Augusta. worked with a lot of different things, but I worked with the TaylorMade guys one day and, started just with on track man on the range and saw stuff with the golf ball, that new TP5X ball that they have. And I thought, wow, this is what I need. This is exactly the thing that I've been struggling with. And this is, I feel is what I need. And then over the course of the next few days, I tested different combinations, a lot of different stuff. And, I came to the conclusion that was the best way forward for me to try and improve, try and win more, try to get back to world number one, try to win more majors. So I'm really excited about that. And, I've been on tour 10 years and this is, it's very rare that you get really excited about your equipment, but I feel like it's a new chapter in my life with a lot of stuff going on, but I really feel with the new equipment as well, it's hopefully going to take me to that next level.
It is very rare that you get excited about new equipment. I remember when he was excited in Dubai that time about new equipment, all that nice new Nike gear that he was trying out and he was fully convinced by. He's in a very difficult position here because he clearly doesn't want to upset Nike and say, finally, I feel I am where I belong. But even saying that a lot of it was down to the testing with the ball, the one thing he said when he was leaving Nike was that he wanted to play with the Nike ball for the next 2 or 3 years, and he'd bought up a couple of thousand of them to keep him going.
He's made himself a bit of hostage to fortune. Now, he's 100 million reasons for liking TaylorMade, and fine, whatever. But he is a hostage to fortune. Like, by saying that the ball is key to the problems that he was having, he now has to play well with this new ball, and, I don't know. Maybe it does have the answer. Maybe TrackMan showed him, oh my God, listen, I had all these problems and all of a sudden they're fixed. But it's worth pointing out, this is a $100 million deal. And the kind of business arrangements around TaylorMade is that the next day, Adidas, who've been trying to offload TaylorMade for the last couple of years, they offloaded it to KPS Capital Partners for $425 million. And you'd be a fool to think that the Rory McIlroy deal wasn't, discussed beforehand, before the sale. This was it. This was the part of the value price. They signed Tiger Woods in January. Now, it's not much good having Tiger Woods when Tiger Woods is sitting injured. So, this all about money in the end, more to me than performance. And I'm sure Rory's no fool. He's not going with equipment that isn't going.
He had to make a decision.
One way or another. Yeah, but they threw 100 million quid at him. So,
well, I'm sure, but we don't know that Callaway may have thrown 100 million quid at him.
Yeah, good point.
There are a few things that stand out for me. One, the immense value of Rory McIlroy to these companies, in that the total market capital, as we learned the day after when they were sold, his 10-year deal is essentially worth 25% of the actual value of the company.
Yeah, good point.
Break it down by 10 years, obviously, and you're going down to 10 million a year, so it's a lot less. The other thing is that I think we look back on the whole Nike era as regards Rory McIlroy a little inaccurately, because he did win 3 of his 4 major championships with the Nike clubs.
Yeah, and Tiger Woods certainly did okay with Nike clubs. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's the 2013 season that we look back on.
It was the adjustment period.
Exactly, and there were other things going on in his life.
Absolutely.
Like what, Dave?
He had certain issues off the course as regards may well be spending the rest of his life with, as regards the person he may well have managing his life off the course. All sorts of issues just played into the fact that at the same time he was trying to change his equipment. But he still won 3 of the 4 majors and was one of the best players we've ever seen in the history of the game for that 12-month period.
You're absolutely right. And the point, I guess, I'm kind of clumsily trying to make is that, of course, the equipment is fine. Of course, the equipment will have been carefully made, tailor-made to suit Rory's needs. Let's just take that as a given. And just as Tiger Woods signed a deal with Bridgestone to use their balls, so Rory's going to use TaylorMade balls. TaylorMade balls are very, very good. They're used by a ton of players. There's no argument there. It's, in the end, there's a much bigger issue here, and it's to do with cementing your future. It's to do with signing as you say, what does he do to boost the profile of TaylorMade in a sale that Adidas have been trying to make for the last 2 years? And so it really speaks to Rory McIlroy's standing in golf.
I'd love to get a grip on the numbers of clubs they expect to sell in terms of the increase they will have in their revenues on the back of actually having him on their books.
Well, that's interesting. Just on the figures involving the sale deal, I know you have these films. I was reading a couple of pieces about it yesterday. Like, the figure that stands out about why Adidas are trying to get rid of TaylorMade, and they also got rid of Adams Golf, which was Tom Watson was involved. Was it aimed at older golfers?
Yes.
It was certainly what he was wearing when he went close at Turnberry that time, and Ashworth as well. And this coming on the back of Nike deciding that they're getting out of the equipment market altogether. That in 2013, TaylorMade were posting $1.7 billion in sales.
Yeah.
Today, sales are a little better than $500 million.
That's unbelievable.
Like, I actually went and checked it from another source to see was it correct.
And
that
it
would,
is.
That would kill a lot of companies.
I saw these numbers in Business Insider, you know, and so I was just reading up on it. And like you, Nathan, I was really stunned. Now, it plays something you mentioned earlier, that golf is in trouble.
Mm.
These are the numbers that say that golf is in trouble. And so all of the big sporting manufacturers are effectively trying to ditch their golf divisions as loss leaders. Now, so then you spin it around and go, well, here's the thing. TaylorMade are making a very brave and bold decision in signing, well, maybe 10 million quid a year isn't a huge amount, but to lock a guy in for $100 million over the course of 10 years, that really is a vote of confidence in Rory McIlroy's ability to carry the brand.
Well, I guess maybe as it was with Nike, the burden is shared. So right now, like, Christ, wouldn't you love to be TaylorMade's marketing guy? And you're thinking, what do we do for our next corporate day out? You've got your choice of Rory, the world number one Dustin Johnson, the world number three Jason Day, Tiger, when he can eventually get back and play a little bit of golf. They have all the big names now.
Because one of the things I was reading as well was that, and you heard Rory talk about the driver, or no, was it you mentioned that he's going to use their new, is it their M1 driver, whatever it's called?
Yeah, I have it here. He is going to use their M2 driver.
Their M2 driver. So Callaway, who are TaylorMade's biggest rivals in golf club manufacture, they came out with the Epic. And so isn't it a brilliant bit of business to have the longest hitters in the world playing your driver? So Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy dovetailing nicely with a TaylorMade driver in their hands. And so it's a brilliant way of stopping the Epic driver eating into your, you know, number one driver in the market.
And the
position. Driver
is the one that people always go for.
Absolutely.
When TaylorMade brought out those white-headed drivers, everybody was looking at them thinking, they look cool. And I've seen a couple of top pros use them. But you wouldn't be as quick to run out and buy a set of TaylorMade irons. You want the big dogs. One before we leave the McIlroy discussion, you made a comment on the Scotty Cameron putter. It's not in TaylorMade's interest, and particularly so when you award a $100 million 10-year contract to one person, for him to be putting badly. If he's putting badly, he doesn't win majors, and if he's not winning majors, they're not getting the value they would like out of McIlroy when it comes to people buying their drivers and their three woods and their irons. If it comes down to it, he will be allowed changed to a Scotty Cameron putter at some stage, because there's no future for either partner in this partnership if McIlroy is not winning majors, and if it's putting that's killing him on the greens and he's exhausted every possible TaylorMade solution to the issue, well, he's going to go back to the Scotty Cameron. TaylorMade won't be able to do a blind thing about it.
Or you can do what Tiger Woods did for such a long time, is play with the Scotty Cameron and not really talk about it.
Very easy, though, given the
I appreciate
prime
that.
Time camera positions that you get behind a putter on TV nowadays.
Yeah, and you know, and TaylorMade make really... TaylorMade have pretty good form when it comes to putters, you know, between the Rossa, the Spider.
Do TaylorMade have a lot of money right now? I think these guys are really going places. Great brand.
Love them. KPS Capital Partners. Whew! Of all capital partners, they're my favourites.
Of all the venture capitalists in the world, guys are
when
top
I think
1%.
VC, that's who I think of. KPS. You guys.
You guys are scum.
He's talking to us, Dave. Not KBS. He's talking to us. Not you. Not you.
You guys are great.
Yeah.
You have to go soon. So we're going to tear through some of the other bits and pieces. So Jordan Spieth, third favorite, has gone close here before. He is 12-1 in places. He was quite good during his press conference. They put all these press conferences up in Periscope. It's really handy now, actually. I'm just lying at home on the couch on Tuesday night, and suddenly Jordan Spieth is there, and you get a good half an hour of Jordan Spieth saying interesting things. He's talking about his world ranking, how he's dropped down to number 6, and he can't quite understand how he's gone down to number 6. Was trying to figure out maybe he's playing too many tournaments, and maybe he needs to cut back to try and maybe other people are artificially boosting their world rankings. But he was asked, not for the first time, about hecklers, and because you remember he had a go at the autograph hunters recently. So he was asked about this again during the press conference on Tuesday.
Have you ever been heckled, or what's the worst you've ever heard, and how did you deal with it?
Fortunately, I don't think much. Every once in a while, if you aren't able to sign something, you know, during a pro-am or you're trying to keep pace or a practice round, then someone will say something under their breath, like you're a prick or something, but that's going to happen when we're in. I don't think so. I think I probably had it this year when I hit the ball in the water on 12 again at Augusta, which didn't matter. I had to go with the pin. I think there was a lot of murmuring and some people saying, oh, not again, or, you know, something like that. But at me personally, I can't think of any that come out.
I don't think I've ever heard an American say prick before.
I didn't think it was an Americanism at all.
It is.
Which makes me think maybe it was that guy in the Kerry jersey who's always hanging around at all the golf tournaments.
Oh, yeah.
It was an Irish guy.
Little prick.
Yeah, little prick, yeah.
It was kind of a funny one, isn't it? The whole press conference where you can see him kind of going, yeah, has anybody ever said anything to me? And he's kind of musing and he's at low energy.
I just thought the PGA press guys must have been, dear God, we've never heard anybody curse in our lives before in a press conference.
Mm. How will we become the fifth major with these kind of expletives being uttered during our press conferences?
How much money you're gonna cost us? So that's Jordan Spieth. Yeah, I thought that was interesting that he actually went and said that. He's 12-1. Sergio Garcia, major winner.
Greeted like a hero.
By almost everybody. Almost everybody, Fionn. There'll always be some people who aren't happy for you. I don't know why he needed to say that.
No, it's true. Although he, was it Harrington said that he and Garcia have had a nice chat and everything is okay?
Oh yeah, was that Rory's wedding?
That was at Rory's wedding. And Sergio came out afterwards and said, yeah, pretty much said the same thing. Yeah. Ryder Cup.
He's a nice guy. I like to think that I'm a nice guy. He respects me. I respect him. It's all good.
Yeah, Rory
should have said that in a Spanish accent.
He was talking about his wedding and someone making the point that Rory McIlroy must have the closest knit group of friends of anyone in the world. That's still not one thing has come out about his wedding.
Did you see, now for non-Irish listeners, I know this is a couple of weeks ago, but there was one of our main newspapers here in Ireland, they did a story on how dare Rory McIlroy not allow the press to talk about his wedding or how he kept this like total lockdown on photographers, etc., given that, you know, we made him who he is. And did you read that piece?
I did, yeah.
Now,
I thought it was very funny.
It is very funny because it was pure clickbait. And
it worked.
It worked unbelievably because people were so incensed. And then on Twitter, people were going, that was a disgrace. I want to read more. That was a disgrace. I want to read more. And it made me laugh.
Just some of the others then who were playing this week. Ricky Fowler and John Rahm, both 20-1. Fowler, you might remember, won in 2015. Beat Sergio and Kevin Kisner in the playoff. Played the last
yesterday.
Four holes in 5-under that year. That's the best. Probably the best players' championship in recent years.
He aced the 17th yesterday in practice.
Mm. Did it make it easier?
No.
Jason Day, who, let's not forget, is the defending champion, 22-1, started with a 63 and a 66 last year, was 15 under par after two rounds, played the weekend in level par, still won comfortably. The man who was chasing him down for the first 2 days last year was Shane Lowry. Who's 100-1 this week, 65 on the opening day last year. I think he was 11 under after two rounds, but really just fell away over the weekend. And probably the story of his year or 18 months at this stage, just that complete lack of consistency. And same again last weekend. Looked for a stage as though he may force himself into the reckoning without ever really having any pressure on him.
I'd love to. I didn't hear him talk about it. I wonder, is he pushing a bit hard or...
Well, I think he'll have taken encouragement from the made cut last weekend and the fact that he picked up a lot of birdies on Saturday and Sunday. It's hard to see where his next big move is going to come from. But there were times this time last year where we were saying that as well, in between the US Open and the Players' Championship. And then the US Open just came from absolutely nowhere. He wasn't really showing much form at all before the US Open. So you will hope that he just... happenstance just comes up with a big week where he throws three or four rounds in together. Last week was particularly disappointing for Seamus Power because he was a shot off the lead after two rounds, and this has happened several times now in his time, a short time on tour. I'm sure he's learning from the experiences, but when he finds himself in the mix after the cut, it just goes downhill very quickly for him. Now, he's a rookie, so you would hope that...
A learning experience.
Yeah, you put it down to that. It'd be great to see him do well and make some real cash on a Sunday.
Greg McDowell is playing as well this week. He is 90-1. Just run Rory McIlroy's stat that I see I'd written down, and I think we spoke about this last year. His issue at the Players' Championship has been his front nine. For combined front nine over the last 4 years, he's 9 over par. That's 218th in the stats. The back nine, he's 40 under par, which is first. So if you can just start quickly.
If there was only a way of analysing this, what does Rory need to do?
Would you say he could do with starting better?
Maybe playing a little more conservatively on the front.
Maybe it's conservatism that's killing him.
No, it's not.
Maybe he needs to take on more flags.
Take driver. I know the landing space is 10 yards wide. Take driver.
So that's the Players' Championship. I'm looking forward to this evening. Rory is playing with Dustin Johnson.
Have we got their tee time, or have I put you on the spot there?
They're playing at around about 20 past 6 Irish time, which is about 20 past 1, I think, in Florida. But either way, that should be sort of the evening sorted. And looking at the leaderboard, one Ricky Fowler is 4 under par after 7 holes. So I'd imagine Jason Day is 3 under par after 7 holes.
How's our buddy Kyle Stanley doing?
Our buddy Kyle Stanley still 4 under par. What? Kyle Stanley is leading this tournament. I'm stunned. And David Lingmerth is 4 under par as well. I backed Kevin Chappell, who was runner up last year and who won a couple of weeks ago. 45-1. Nice price.
It is.
So that's the Players' Championship. Move on, see what else to talk about. So what else do we want to talk about, Fionn?
We can talk about... Well,
what about the golf sixes, Fionn?
Golf sixes. Golf sixes. I don't care that Lukas Bjørgaard and Thorbjørn Olesen, they beat a bunch of Australians that I've never heard of in the final. I couldn't care less. I don't even care that it ended with a missed putt rather than a made putt. But I have to say, there are two things I care about, one positive, one negative. I think the format was brilliant. I really, really enjoyed the format. I think it was hampered by the lack of names. But you know what? That's nothing wrong with the format. They can fix that, hopefully next year. I thought it was really, really good. I thought it had the possibility. You can see the possibility of real excitement in years to come, particularly when you have like the notable names that we all follow. The thing I did also care about, but in a negative way, was that who sent the memo to the Sky Sports commentary team telling them, guys, we need to pump this up. You need to be all amped up. You need to be all in. They completely ruined it for me. It was just like, I get it. It's super exciting, super pumped, super this, super that. And it's just like, ugh. Just do the commentary like you normally do the commentary and stop trying to amp up this excitement. The format itself was exciting enough.
What was the format again?
Okay, so 16 teams of two in pool play on Saturday. Both players hit tee ball and then playing alternate shots the rest of the hole. You win a point for each hole you win against the team you're playing, but there are only 6 holes, obviously. And after the pool play, the teams advance to the knockout bracket, 8 teams on the Sunday, and they play head-to-head before determining the winner. And as I said, Denmark emerged the winner. Now, I know Thorbjørn Olesen. I've never heard of Lukas Bjørgaard.
Good European Tour player.
Is he?
Solid.
That doesn't mean... me not knowing is an indicator only of my ignorance. Can I just say
well,
that?
Well, Nathan's already gone out on a limb there by calling him a good European Tour player. Sorry. He's hardly giving you his life story there.
I was just going on the presumption that nobody was going to ask for a third opinion on Lukas Bjørgaard.
But that was it. And so I don't know if either of you got a chance.
I did. I saw a good chunk of it on Saturday, and I watched back with this in mind. I would concur with a lot of what you said. I thought it worked very well, and I was reading about it online that those who were there thought it was even better.
Yeah.
That as a viewing experience there, that part of the issue was that Sky decided, and part of the reason for having this is we're trying to attract a new crowd to golf. I would think almost you're trying to retain your crowd at this stage. And that's where Sky lost out. They thought, all right, we're going to have Kevin Peterson here, and we're going to have a load of celebrities interviewing players when they're walking down to the hole, which is a good idea in itself. Peter Lowry has spoken about this, how this was something he was saying at tour meetings that they really should try and do. But so they might ask him the one question about golf, and then it would be, what's your favourite colour? or something totally inane like that. It would be celebrity style questioning. I thought that there was really no need for that. Some of the little bits and pieces of, I do like the walk on music and that angle of it. Now, there was probably no need for the flashing lights in the middle of the afternoon.
No.
But what made it a success for me, and this is part of a bigger issue for golf and, well, definitely for the European Tour, is that it was busy. It was about six people deep in the crowd. And I was talking to somebody at that lunch yesterday from the European Tour about that, and they said that the organisers had done a huge amount of work. I think it's somewhere around Watford, the course, just outside London. And they got the entire community involved. It was £6 a ticket. And obviously it's a very compact venue. It worked for Super Sixes, just having six holes. Everyone is in very tight. Yeah. But suddenly you turn it on the Saturday afternoon, you think, oh, there's something happening here. This must be interesting. There's a big crowd of people. Everyone seems up for it. There's a bit of a buzz. And part of the problem when you're watching, like, the Dubai World Championship, technically the biggest event on the European Tour.
Place is empty.
There's nobody watching
it.
It's
just expats. That's all it is.
Locals there's nobody there. And that's a huge issue they have.
Massive.
Well, we're going to be watching the Portuguese Open this weekend.
Are we?
Well, those who tune in to the Portugal Open this weekend will see empty greens with a couple of caddies and a couple of pros walking around the green. Nobody is watching it. There will be nobody there on Thursday and Friday, probably Saturday, and a handful on Sunday afternoon. And like the Dubai, the DP World Championship, those that are there are expats.
Yeah, I'll turn it on and go, the Euro Pro Tour is still on. When does the club start?
And that's a big task. For. I guess that's one of the reasons they're doing things like this, because clearly they are being drawn east because that's where the money is,
sure,
and that's the way of getting the players involved. My thought on this was, it's a perfect start, and some of the players bought into it, like Andy Sullivan was...
Chris Wood and Andy Sullivan.
Really got into it. They did well, which was important, that England actually got to
the quarters.
The quarters, and they were still involved, so the crowd got behind them. And I think a lot of the players had a bit of fun with it, which was good, but... If it was bigger names, and I do wonder if we get to the stage where, say, you look at the biggest name, you look at Rory McIlroy, look at all the money he has. At some stage, does he start going, that looks like fun.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just play that.
That's exactly right. I think you're absolutely spot on. And I have to say, to our favourite tour, the European Tour, clearly,
great tour.
And Keith Pelly, wow, visionary. No, but Keith Pelly, really, hats off to Keith Pelly, because I'm not saying this was just his idea, but that he shepherded this idea into fruition. This is a great idea. They'll do it again next year. Hopefully it'll attract a better name, some better names. But you would like to think that the USPGA is looking across the water and go, hey, like, this is kind of interesting. What if we introduce something similar in the PGA Tour? I think it's an absolute winner. I thought it was brilliant.
The Fionn Davenport seal of approval.
No, but even if the
Fionn gets paid directly from the European Tour, you see.
Yeah. Even though I didn't care who won. I just loved the format.
You didn't know who won.
That's a very good point. 3-1 to Denmark.
Well done,
Dave. Well done. You are 100% correct.
The other thing, sorry, did you touch on it there? That is something that every tour should be looking at, was the shot clock.
Ah, USA penalised. Never heard of the two players.
And the player who was penalised wasn't happy about it, because he's left-handed. And he said that the way the shot clock, so it goes around on a little trolley, on a cart, was in the eyesight of right-handed players. But as a left-handed player, he didn't know, which is just brilliant.
Isn't that brilliant?
It was behind him.
Now, again, like, a lot of this is, there's so much etiquette around golf, and you know, if you were to bring this into proper tournaments, how it would go down, because you ended up with a situation where the clock, so they had 40 seconds to take their shot, but when it goes down to 10, everybody in the crowd starts going 10, yeah, 9,
8,
which obviously puts the pressure on. Yeah. Andy Sullivan, did you see Andy Sullivan at one stage? So Andy Sullivan's at 10 and Andy's ready, and then he just decides to wait a minute and has another look, 3, 2, and everyone's like, and he just goes up and hits it just as it's about to go. Just haven't, but it worked brilliantly, the shot clock, in speeding people up. Now, maybe there is a way of doing that somehow on proper tour events.
Why isn't there? Of having
some sort of clock everywhere along. And
it makes it exciting for the viewer at home. Like, for those who watch the NFL, there is obviously a play clock.
Or the NBA.
And Or the NBA, but particularly the NFL, because it's like a golfer. The quarterback is the golfer in this particular position. He's got 10 seconds to get the snap away. And you're looking at it going, I don't think they're going to get the snap off here. Someone better call a timeout here quick. It could be a massive moment in the game. I'll watch golfers and hope. You're looking at them, please miss the 10-second window. Please, I want to see what happens here.
I think that's a very good idea. To actually have, and that the viewer can see the shot clock in the corner.
Yeah.
You need to hit the shot. You need to hit the shot. Oh!
And there's definitely enough money on the European Tour and the PGA Tour now to have a referee going around driving a cart or something, so all the players know. And maybe you can extend it, maybe on, you say, in the final round or on the back nine or something like that of the last day, you get a minute or you get a little bit
just
more time.
Just ignorance, when does the shot clock start?
When the previous players hit his shot.
Yeah, so you as soon as you've the previous players hits your shot, so it's your turn now, you have 40 seconds to address. Because also as well, you should be getting your yardages, you should know all of that before you even go
like
near.
Amateur golfers playing on a Saturday and Sunday should be ready to play the second they're playing 100% their ball. Now I'm sure there are issues around lost balls, unusual lies, I would have thought. Is there any sort of discretion?
No, but there is. No, but that's the point, is that it's only from the point where you're determined to be at address. So you have 40 seconds from the point of address. It's nothing to do with like looking for a lost ball or getting a ruling over a bad lie or any of that. You know, that's all separate. So
someone like Kevin Na would be in big trouble.
The old Kevin Na.
Right, he's changed his ways.
Jason Day.
Yeah. Garcia with his waggles.
Somebody, Jason Day, who said, I'm going to take as long as I want to take.
Yeah.
Tough.
And while he can. The other one is the Wells Fargo Championship. Now, I was more watching the Golf Sixes, in fairness, but on Sunday I did sit down and watch. And I was very, very, I was excited by DJ. I thought DJ posted like 9 under to sit inside the clubhouse.
Looks set, certain for a playoff.
Absolutely dead set for a playoff with Brian Harman, the lefty, like who doesn't hit the ball a long way, who birdies 17 really, really well. And then he's sitting on 18 and all he needs par to tie and force the playoff. He needs birdie to win. He hits his second. Now, for a guy who's not a long hitter, I don't know what he had, 5 wood or something, but he hit it long and left, so he had this ruling, so he had to take this lie. And I always love the way PGA players can always get a good ruling. Anyway, drops the ball and then duffs the chip. Ooh. Duffs the chip to the edge of the green and makes the 30-foot putt.
Oh, it was brilliant.
Oh, it was amazing.
He rattled that in.
Did you see the celebration?
Past.
Yeah. The celebration was what made it for me.
Wasn't it brilliant?
It was just such joy.
For a second PGA Tour win. And Mrs.
It reminded
Harman.
Me of
what, Mrs. Harman. What?
See, she was so happy. The hugs, the kisses. You know,
were there any children involved, ruining it for everybody?
I don't know. I think there might have been.
She was probably thinking, I might be able to get a new kitchen out of this.
Jason Day could do it winning again. Dash must be about 8 at this stage. He'll be about 6 foot the next time we see him.
He will be. With a beard and a brew.
The manner in which, by the way, that was, of course, a Peter Alice reference. I'm actually not trying to be sexist. You moved on too quickly for the joke to sink in.
I was trying to save you, Dave.
Constantino Rocca, 95, when he duffed his chip into the Valley of Sin and then holed it from, 900 feet to force the playoff with John Daly. That's what I was thinking of watching this going, hey, it's an easy enough up and down from here. Oh, no, he's going to have to do a Rocca on it. And he does. And he sinks this outrageously long putt. Brilliant.
I have to say, and just because, and I was thinking about it while I was watching. It was just like, I wanted the playoff because I actually wanted Dustin Johnson. I liked the idea of him getting the 4 in a row, and it didn't happen. So long as Pat Perez didn't, and I don't know why. I'm sure Pat Perez is a really nice guy. It's that hair.
Yeah, you could do it, getting rid of the hair, all right.
It's the mullet. It's like, dude, come on.
Brian Harman, just the 6th left-handed player in PGA Tour history to win more than once. This is a Dave McIntyre special all over.
Who's the others?
Mike Weir.
The other 5.
Phil Mickelson.
Correct.
Steve Flesh.
Whoa, good.
So, Steve Elkington. One more, is there?
No, you have 2 more.
Elkington.
He wasn't a lefty.
You're not. You're going.
Bubba Watson.
I can't believe.
Bubba Watson.
Oh yeah.
Correct.
And Nick O'Hearn.
No.
Oh.
On any tour or PGA Tour?
PGA Tour.
Are we going way back
Julius
in time?
Boris?
Now?
We are Julius Boris.
Julius Boris.
Julius Boris.
Well
no.
done.
That's not right.
This man
but he's a major winner.
He's now 81.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
He is a former Open champion. 1963 Open, Dave. This is playing. This is right down your alley.
I do not go back to the
Peter
60s.
Thompson. No, no, it's not. He wasn't left-handed. I have no clue. Who?
Bob Charles.
Ah. Well, I got five.
You did
it's not
very
too
well.
Bad.
You did very well, Dave.
I'm surprised Nick O'Hearn hasn't won a couple
the
of times.
Stats man.
There you go.
Anything else, Fionn?
Nope.
You want to go through? I
no.
think that's us done. That is the Players' Championship previewed. Joel will be back next week, I think. And you here, Fionn? You're travelling anywhere nice?
I'm moving house.
Oh, finally. Yeah. It's all going through.
8 months later, this is a long stride. So we had sale agreed last September with the girlfriend, with Laura. Sale agreed last September, and then the chain collapsed twice. And
don't ask what the chain is.
Yeah. You will never break the chain.
Broke the chain.
And
I have an idea in my head what the chain is.
It's, the purchaser, the onward vendor, so on and so forth. So anyway, we just finally managed to exchange contracts last week. And so moving on Saturday week. And
we should finish every episode of Golf Weekly with a major development in one of the lives of the protagonist
that
week.
The relief. And then, but then, unfortunately, and much to Laura's chagrin, just as we move in, I'm heading off to the States for a couple of weeks.
Again.
Yeah. So it's not like...
Where are you going?
I'm going to Orlando first. Volcano Falls, which is the new theme park that's opening up at Universal.
You have the best life.
I'm going to that opening. And then I come back for 2 days. And then I'm off to the aforementioned Washington, D.C. there from June 1st to June 8th.
There's a meet up with our friend of the pod.
Andrew. Yeah, I'm going to go and hopefully get in.
Do you know Andrew?
No.
Okay.
Andrew Beattie. No, I just know him from Twitter.
You do now.
I do now.
You're friends.
So, Agence France-Presse. I wonder if they're the lying liars of the fake media yet in the eyes of Sean Spicer or President Trump.
Let us know.
Maybe
DM
that's
us, Andrew.
That's where they want to be. Mm. You want that kind of status. We're playing tomorrow.
We are playing tomorrow. I thought I was on the verge of a 10-day streak of just dream-like scenario. I'm getting to play with Dave every time as well, which is obviously right up there. Tomorrow we're playing Portmarnock Links.
Yes.
Then Wednesday, we're meant to be playing Port Stewart, though I can't now get a babysitter.
What?
Yes.
You have a wife.
Yeah, who works.
And thankfully my babysitter /wife
who also
still
doesn't like to be referred
leave.
To as a babysitter. So
well, your absence is that going to cost me my chance of playing?
Probably.
Hang on, is that, sorry, explain this to me. Do you have cousins or do you have siblings or
not who live around? But it's I need them to babysit at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, well, what if I gave you the number of a professional babysitting service?
But they then need to transport my child to school.
So you need someone to raise your child for
should
a day.
We be having this entire conversation
really.
During
and
the
then,
end of the podcast?
Monday week, where are we going? Monday
Paris Court,
Paris
Monday
Court.
Week.
Are you going to Paris Court?
No. No, for the media day. Yeah, I'm away. I'm in Orlando that week, yeah. We'd be on opposing teams.
We would
because
be.
I would be on the Sean O'Rourke team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What ringer are you going to get in?
That implies that we've gone head to head in the previous stage.
We have a good ringer. We have a very
team.
Good. We have worked it out well. We thought we need somebody who's good but has a high handicap.
Who?
Somebody who's progressing. So we've gone for a former Republic of Ireland international,
Kevin
Keith Andrews.
Keith Andrews.
He's Paris courting, is he?
He is Paris courting. Very yes. Good. So I'm looking forward to the next few days because I'm going to see Dave McIntyre's new swing in action.
Six lessons.
Yeah. Joe, he isn't here to speak for himself, but he was impressed, as in by the sheer change. Still a lot of bad golf shots, still far too many duff golf shots for my liking, but the actual shape of the swing is unrecognisable.
Joe hit a drive yesterday in 18. I have to say it's the longest ball I've ever seen him hit. He hit some duffy.
That is the hole to drive along on
18.
Luttrell
Stand. So 18th at Luttrell
Stand. Did he go for the green in two?
But it's a
he
par
had 80 yards. For the green. Because you know they've switched the orders of the nines.
Oh, of course. Sorry, we started on the 10th.
That's right. So
we played
so he,
sorry, yeah.
He had drive with an 80-yard pitch for a second. Still made five.
That's a nice way to finish.
Well, on that note, all right. Enjoy the players. We'll talk to you next week.
All my exes wear Rolexes. But I reside right here in Dardanelle. Little JD starter kit right here.